Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hammer, let's go a day back further. Kings get a win in Milwaukee, probably their best game of the season, maybe not their best start. Do you think Doug Christie goes to Dylan Cardwell again tonight against Denver?
Well, I got to be honest. We kind of talked about this earlier. I think there's a possibility of that because you're going up against Aaron Gordon, and Aaron Gordon is just a beast, and he's a big, strong, super athlete. And you know, I don't think the Kings can use a Russell Westbrook or DeMar DeRozan against him for long stretches. Maybe I'm wrong, Doug, he's been picking and choosing his lineups, and just because you start doesn't mean you're going to play more than 3 minutes. You know, it's kind of the way it's been. Isaac Jones started a game and barely played. Nick Clifford started a game. He might have played 20 minutes, but, a lot of these guys who are quote-unquote starters for the night, they're just there as like a first inning thing. Like what we see in Major League Baseball. That's what it looks like to me.
I feel like we haven't seen Isaac since.
Yeah, well, might not see Isaac.
Well, ever.
Let's move forward. Again, if some of these things happen the way they might happen. Well, it's no secret. What I'm alluding to is there has been interest, reported interest between the Kings and Precious Achiuwa, and they don't have any roster spots. James laid it out beautifully on the insiders that somebody would have to get cut or waived, and that might be Isaac Jones is what some people have reported.
Is that the right call, Hammer?
Okay, so from what I've been told, it was pretty simple from a source within the Kings. We have 15 roster spots. All of them are taken, and that's kind of end of story. The Kings only have two players who are on non-guaranteed contracts. One of those is Isaac Jones. The other one is Russell Westbrook. They're clearly not going to waive Russell Westbrook. So if they do have to make a move, there is a third option, outside of those two. The other option is that they can trade somebody. And it's something that I think has kind of been hanging over this team for a little while here. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them trade somebody if they feel like it would open up a roster spot. They like Isaac Jones, at least they have in the past. And, you know, you kind of were hoping that he would take some substantial leap forward, but it's really difficult with what the Kings are dealing with right now. You know, Isaac Jones is not a player that you can stick out there for 25 to 30 minutes a night to start eating some of these minutes that that go to Keegan Murray. And if that's the case, then, you know, if it's one thing if he's filling in for 12 minutes off the bench behind Keegan. It's a whole other thing if you need him to play serious minutes, and he just hasn't been able to, I think, earn the trust of the coaching staff is how I would kind of look at it and phrase it. Just because we saw it last year with Doug too. Doug did not play Isaac Jones once he took over the team. And we've seen him hesitant to use Isaac Jones early in this season. A little different, a little difficult to judge on what the Kings are going to do here. But as of right now, again, from inside the walls, we have 15 players under contract and our roster is full. And so again, if they end up signing Precious, I wouldn't be shocked, especially I believe he was on the Knicks while Scott Perry was a GM there.
Mm. What was your biggest takeaway from Saturday's game?
I think my biggest takeaway is, like, number one, there is a little bit of dog in this team. They do have some fight. And so I think that was the first thing. Number two, like, I just don't know what to make of, like, the 15-2 deficit to start the game. Like, you can't keep digging holes for yourself and think that you're going to climb out of it. So I think there are a lot of positives from that game. Moving the ball, you know, 30 assists is a huge positive. Winning the rebound battle is a huge positive. Four players scoring over 20 is a huge positive. But at the same time, like, you don't need to get yourself in so much trouble all the time. And I feel like the Kings, if that's going to be one of their traits to, you know, sort of fall behind big early and then climb back into games, that's not going to be sustainable, and they're going to lose a lot more than we think they are. So good win, good battle, but at the same time, like, they got a lot to clean up, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah, I would kind of, it's not a trait of theirs, because it's like literally 50-50 with this, but I was going to say I'd like to see them start games off better and not have to, you know, dig themselves out of a hole. But they didn't do that against OKC. They didn't do that against Phoenix. They've only played six games. So
the other games, I think they did against Chicago either.
No, they were down early with Chicago.
Were they?
The second string came in that okay. game. And then they turned it up, and then they lost that lead.
Yeah.
But let's just be aware of that, Sacramento Kings. Don't let that be a trend. Be more of the team that you were in the first half against Phoenix, that you were in the first three quarters against OKC, and come out ready to go. It's been something that's plagued this team for years now, you know, not being ready to play seemingly at the start of the games. Let's make sure we
do. Or coming out of halftime. Yeah, I mean, true. It's the same thing. Yeah. Like, how many times have we seen them just not come out of half early in the season where you're like, boy, you guys just fought really well for 24 minutes and then just went away.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I like what I saw on Saturday in that respect. Do you think with the mix and match of the starting lineups, we talked about it earlier, do you think they should just get to the point where they're just starting Russell Westbrook?
I mean, it really, for me, it just depends on the matchup. Like, I can't imagine, like, a game like tonight, where are you going to put Russ? Like, who's he going to defend? And that's where it becomes a problem. Now, if you're talking about him, supplanting, Dennis Schroeder as a starter, that's a different question. But for right now, like, I think there are going to be games where you can't start him. But this isn't just a big team in Denver. Like, when they go to their bench, they get equally as big. Like, it's just a gigantic team. And so I don't know how, you know, you can try to be quicker. But the problem I have with the Kings trying to play small ball all the time is that they're not good enough shooters and they don't play defense well enough to really be a small ball team. So that's where I think you run into problems. I think Russ has been a dream for the Kings so far. Everything he's done has been spectacular. There's been a couple of games where you're like, okay, man, you know, tone it back a bit. Even, you know, the win over the Bucks, didn't he go 0 for 5 from 3 and 4-14 from the field? That's a little bit of like, hey, tone it back a little bit. But overall, I think he's been really good. And if Malik Monk is out, which he is again tonight, I think it kind of, you need one of those players who's, you know, kind of a wild card and maybe putting up some shots that you wouldn't love, but hoping that some of them go in.
Plus 14, Russ. Get him up, baby. Get them up for the plus minus crowd, Russ. Come on now. I think Casey brings that question to you because we obviously talked about Dylan on Saturday. But it's 2-4. We are legitimately six different starting lineups into the season. Chicago and Oklahoma City, they did start the same five players. They just had Russ and DeMar switch spots in the two games. That's semantics, but they had Russ at the four in one of them and Russ at the two in the other one of them. And it's, again, not that big of a deal. It's the same five guys. But this is kind of what we expected, right, Hammer? When Keegan Murray went out and we knew there was a lack of depth at that position, that, like, Doug's not going to settle on Drew Eubanks. He's not going to settle on a singular guy. He's going to mess around with the lineup until Keegan Murray's able to step on the floor again.
Well, yeah, and I think you have to, because at this point in the season, outside of, like, your top seven, eight guys, I don't know if you know what you have. I'd even say seven. So if you figure the starting lineup, and let's just say Russ is in the starting lineup, once you get past Malik Monk and Keon Ellis, I don't know what the hell you have with this team. And you have to start not just looking for players that can come in and play a position, but players that can come in and actually play with other players. And you start to see trends in like two-man rotations, three-man rotations, what's working, what's not, you know, and it's such a trial and error thing that you have to go through, especially with only four preseason games and Russell Westbrook not playing in any of them. You know, it is going to be like a trial and error game that the Kings are going through. I don't blame Doug. I don't think anyone has stepped up and said, hey, you have to start me every game. And like I mentioned to you guys earlier when we were on the handoff, like, look, if you don't have Malik Monk, having Russell Westbrook coming off the bench is a huge luxury. He basically can give you what Malik Monk can give you, plus a few extra rebounds, typically. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that there is like an advantage to having him and being able to use him in different versatile ways, whether it's as a starter in the backcourt, as a backup point guard, as a front court starter. Like, you're able to move him around to just kind of plug whatever, you know, leak is happening at that moment. And unfortunately for the Kings, you know, it's their roster makeup. Their roster makeup, again, after that top seven guys is really, really rough. And when you get Keegan back, that gives you, you know, that eighth guy for sure. But then on top of that, once you have eight solid players, it's really easy to dabble and figure out who's the ninth, eighth and a half, ninth and a half guy. But you need those other eight guys really solidified and playing well together.
I want to dive a little bit more into that game on Saturday, and I talked about it earlier. I thought Dennis Schroeder played easily his best game as a Sacramento King. And I thought, combined with the Bobby Portis Sabonis scenario, I think Dennis talked about it after the game about how that kind of woke everybody up. Dennis starts, obviously, gets subbed out. From the moment he was subbed back into the game, I thought he was locked in. I thought he was great. I thought there was intention and a level of force behind what he did offensively, defensively, and even leading, talking to his teammates. There were two different occasions where I don't know who was right or wrong. I wasn't there. But Keon didn't do something that Dennis thought he should have done. And right there, Dennis was like, yo, what are we doing? You're supposed to be here, yada, yada, yada. That last three-pointer before the first quarter, I think Dennis might have scored. He recognized what was going on. You could see him telling these guys, hey, get up, get up. There's 5 seconds left. Get up, get up. Like, it was just, he picked up his focus and intensity so much after he came back into the game. And I thought that was one of the major reasons why they were able to elevate and win that game on Saturday. Do you think that was the best game he had played as a King so far?
Yeah, I think probably so. I think it does also speak volumes that your point guard has to tell a bunch of 30-something-year-olds to get up and start playing defense.
Well, to be fair, it was Nick Clifford he was telling it to.
Well, yeah, but,
and Nick didn't get up, and Tony Prince made the shot.
Yeah, and even the play I remember with him yelling at Keon, like, Keon is looking at these guys going, dude, I'm guarding two guys every single time. Like, he's stuck between two perimeter players trying to dive back and forth, trying to, you know, challenge the three-point shot. I've watched it, like, multiple times where Keon runs out and it's like, okay, what am I supposed to do here? There's two of them and no one else is helping. So I kind of get it, but I do think that, you know, we're seeing him start to fit in better. And again, the 30 assists, I think that starts with him. Him and Domas, you know, that's really where you're going to get the bulk of your assists, but also the bulk of the flow of your offense. So I think it's good that Dennis is kind of settling in and he's also looking for his shots. I thought the game before might have been one of his worst games. And I felt like he forced everything. What was he, 2 of 9 from the field? But the two shots that he opened the game with were like, hey, man, I haven't shot yet. I'm shooting. I don't care what you guys are doing. And it was like, ugh, it was a little unnerving to watch. But I do think he's starting to settle in and starting to realize that, like, if they're going to win, he has to play a very specific way. And what it can't be is the player he was in Golden State last year, or that even – it's got to be a mixture of the player he was with the Nets and the player he was with Detroit, because every stop he was totally different last year. Mm-hmm. But that Detroit, you know, like his final 25 different. Games or whatever. What's that?
His role was different in each of his stops last year.
No, I totally agree. But in Detroit, I thought he was a leader on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at his shooting numbers, they looked exactly like they look like in Golden State, where everyone there is like, get this dude out of here. But that's not what it was with Detroit. They wanted him back really bad because he showed a bunch of leadership. The player where he was spectacular scoring and hitting his shots was with the Nets. So very different types of roles that he's had. But I think everyone here in Sacramento would love to see like international Dennis show up. And that's kind of what we saw the other night. He kind of took over the game for moments, and that's okay. You know, he's a good player. There is a bunch of wide open mid-range shots for him to take and for DeMar to take. And you know, as long as you're hitting those shots, it's okay. It's just tough. You don't want to continuously fall behind with the 3-point, you know, sort of differential thing.
We saw a stat line from Domantas Sabonis that I think we have been waiting for since he returned to the floor the second game of the season. He's never going to take too many shot attempts. He's rarely going to force bad shots. Like he was at 13 field goal attempts. He lived at the free throw line, as did most of the members in Sacramento Kings uniforms. But he also had 6 assists. So he put up one of those stat lines that I think can get Kings fans excited. Hammer, what did anything stand out to you as being a little different with Domas on Saturday, other than a couple of passes leading to shots going in?
Yeah, I think we saw it in Chicago too. He just looks like he's starting to feel better and starting to be more aggressive and attacking the rim in a better way. You know, I think the what did he shoot? 5 of 15 against. Was that OKC where he just kept missing bunnies?
Yeah.
I think he just kind of got frustrated and said, you know what, I'm just not playing with enough force. And that's what I think we saw the last two games. When he's rolling to the basket, he's rolling and it looks painful for the opposition. You know, he's all elbows. He's shoving people around. He's looking more and more like himself. And look, I think, you know, we can talk about, you know, who is the driving force behind this team, but when Domas is good, it changes everything for them, especially when he's good on the glass. So he's starting to pick it up, and you know, maybe it took a little bit longer than we'd hope. But again, we're what are they, 2-4 or 6 games into the season, and you're starting to see him start to progress in, you know, his 5 games, where I think it looked pretty ugly the first two. Then the third game I thought was bad against OKC, but the last two you're starting to see that 18-6 and 12 or, you know, or what did he have the other night? 24-6 and 12 or 13. That's the Domas that everybody's kind of come accustomed to. And we're still waiting for, like, you know, the start of the double-double streak and the triple doubles, you know, his first triple-double of the season. We haven't got there yet either. And I think it's more a function of just the way the Kings are moving on the court. And as they're starting to find themselves, he'll be able to set guys up and maybe make life easier on a few players.
There's something for me that still looks a little off with Domas. Not like he's hurt or something like that, but the game just doesn't look fluid and in a rhythm for him. He's probably in a little bit of a different role. And it's just something that's I'm getting used to it. It's not even like I need him to do more than what he did on Saturday stat-wise. Just watching him, it just looks a little clunky right now, and I want to see him be in more of a groove overall. I can't put my finger on what it is I'm looking for from him, though, because like I said, it's not like, oh, I need you to average 25, and like, it's not that, like, the numbers have been there or whatever. Just something feels a little off with his game that I'm looking for. I want to see him step up a little bit.
Kenny's just waiting for him to be wearing a different jersey, and then he'll know that everything is right in the world. The Domas is on a different team and not on the Kings.
No, not necessarily. It's not that. It's just, I don't know, just some off. Maybe it's just a different role. Maybe we're used to seeing things running through him offensively, and that's not what's going on. And seeing him getting his points and stuff a different way might be an issue. I thought his defense so far in this season has been a really big issue. Teams have been destroying him on the pick and roll, and I don't know whose call it is for him to be in drop coverage like he has been, but it's been destroying the Kings so far this year on the defensive end. But with that being said, I thought he did a really, really good job on Giannis, as good as anybody could do on Giannis on Saturday, and even had maybe the defensive stop of the night when Giannis was attacking the basket late in the game. And Sabonis did a great job of moving his feet, keeping his chest in front of him, and forcing the pass that ended up getting deflected. So he, as that game went along, I thought he got better and better to me than what I have been seeing from him.
Yeah, and I'm with you. There's a couple of things I'll point to. Number one, like, him and Dennis Schroeder still don't know how to play together. Like, Dennis wants the ball in his hands and he wants to do a pick and roll. And I think Domas is okay with that, but that's the only player right now that's playing a pick and roll. Everyone else is doing the DHO thing. And so you've got one guy who's kind of doing something different, and you have to know where you are on the court, where Dennis is on the court, how you need to set the screen for Dennis. Because a lot of time, Domas is doing the same exact thing for every single player who runs through and kind of does a little circle move around him. And if one of those guys is doing something different, it stands out. So I'd say him and Russ need to get a little bit more chemistry. Again, they played together when Domas was a rookie, and Russ has talked about that being his rookie when he was a younger player. And so I think it'll start to smooth itself out and start to look better. But like, I think the entire team still looks a little clunky, especially, I mean, on the defensive end. That's not clunky. That's just like, you know, there's some things that you can fix on a vehicle. There's other times where you just need to get a new vehicle, and the defense is in very close to that stage where it's like, I don't know that there's anything you can do outside of changing players to get the defense to play better.
Well, the Kings might just be in a position where they've got to make the most of the car they have and get to work every day. Like that, yeah. That could be the situation they're in as it pertains to the defensive side of the ball. But we'll come back. We'll talk more about that as the Sacramento Kings, obviously, they get a win on Saturday against the Milwaukee Bucks, and they'll close out this 4-game road trip in Denver in just about 90 minutes. We'll talk more about this with our insider from the insiders. It's James Hamm with D'Lo and KC on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Hey, Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Shout out to our guy Dusty Baker and Baker Family Wines. They had a hell of a celebration this weekend. 6 years in West Sacramento. Shout out to Coach Molly. She pulled up, had some rosé, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And they looked like they had a good time out there at the tasting room in West Sacramento. Big congratulations to Dusty Baker and to Baker Family Wines.
Big ups to my people over there.
How would you grade Doug Christie through the first 6 games of the season? He's obviously had it. We haven't really referenced this a lot. It wasn't really the most impactful. You said his name a minute ago, Casey. Neek Clifford did return to the rotation on Saturday. Of course, we haven't seen him. I think it was since opening night,
yep,
where he started. And Doug has just been faced with Doug Christie has had a lot of San Francisco 49er energy,
yeah,
this year with guys playing big roles and then immediately being unavailable. How do you think he's done so far in this very early part of the season?
You know, I think he's held his own. I don't think it's been like, oh my gosh, like he's doing incredible things out there. But I do think like he's been willing to try new things, you know, out of necessity, but also like game one of the regular season, he put Dylan Cardwell out there and let him finish the last 5 minutes in a super, super close game. And I thought Cardwell played really well.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's empowered players in certain situations. And then I think in other situations, you know, he gave Dario Saric an opportunity to say that, okay, yeah, what I did in the preseason wasn't a fluke. And it was a fluke. He's put, you know, Isaac Jones out there a little bit. That might be the one grade that I would be a little more tough on, Doug. Like, you probably should give Isaac Jones an opportunity in some of these situations. I don't know that that's, you know, the end all be all, but, you know, again, tonight you're going to go up against a guy like Aaron Gordon, and it sure would be nice to have a 6'9" big long wingspan power forward that could go up against Aaron Gordon. I don't know that he's going to be able to, you know, stay on the court or not, or even get on the court. But, you know, I don't really know what else you're supposed to do. You had your center go out in like the final 10 days in the buildup to the first game. And, you know, that whole time you signed Russell Westbrook at like the very last second and just threw him out there, having no games played with the rest of the group at all. You know, there's nothing you can do about the lack of length and athleticism on this team. And, you know, crazy enough, I think everybody's kind of got an opportunity to go out there at least for a few minutes here and there in meaningful moments and to see if they could perform and see how they did. And, you know, again, we're still waiting for Maxime Reyneau to score his first NBA bucket. Mm. You know, Neat Clifford has 2 points on the season and he's only played 2 games, but still he's played quite a few minutes to only have 2 points. And so you're trying to bring some guys along, but at the same time, you're trying to gel. And I know a couple of people have mentioned and like on Twitter that, you know, oh, you can't keep running a 36-year-old out there for 37 minutes a game. And it's like, okay, well, why don't you tell me what your decision would be, who you would put on the court instead of DeMar DeRozan, because I don't think they have anybody else that can do what DeMar does. And so for right now, DeMar's got to play 37 minutes a game, just like Christian McCaffrey has to touch the ball 33 times a game. Yeah. Like that's the situation you're in as a coach. It's a situation you're in with your roster. You know, you have one day between the Bucks game and tonight's game. And in that time, half of your team is sick or is injured and can't practice. So, you know, they're all going to play tonight, but they go into tonight with, you know, again, with Zach LaVine and Dennis Schroeder and Devin Carter, all questionable up until, you know, 10 o'clock this morning. But on top of that, Malik Monk's away from the team. Keegan Murray's still gone. It's been kind of like a unique first 6 games of the season for sure. And I think he's holding on and doing the best he can in the situation. There have been mistakes. There are plenty of times where I'm looking at the game and say, you should probably call a timeout and stop the bleeding the old fashioned way by, you know, stopping the game. But I'm not really sure that he has a team that is responding like the right way all the time. And they're starting to gel a little bit. They're starting to build chemistry, but it's a process.
You know, James, hearing you kind of break that down, you know, it's clear that Doug Christie, who's trying to win games, Scott Perry, who's trying to win games, and they're in survival mode right now because they don't really have the luxury with injuries and with just the schedule to mess around with three rookies and have them out there to help them win games. Like Neek, Maxime, even Dylan in certain situations. Like, it'd be cool if you play the young guys, let them grow. Like, we don't have time for that. We're going up against the Bucks. We got Denver tonight. Like, we have no time for that. And if you don't care about winning, then sure, just go out there and let them do whatever. But Doug and these guys, they do care about winning right now. And they're like, I'm just trying to survive. I'm missing Keegan. I'm missing Malik here and there. The roster's already a little bit flawed. Man, whatever we got to do to keep our head above water, that's what we're going to do. And that seems to be how Doug has gone about these early games, because he doesn't have the luxury to kind of see what these rookies or these young guys are giving them. They either produce and they get to play, or they don't, and you got to get out real quick.
Well, that, and like I mentioned earlier, it's much easier to put a rookie out there for 12 minutes when he's got no responsibilities, but that's not the roster they have. So, you know, if they have everybody healthy, you know, playing that eighth and a half, you know, that half guy or the ninth player, that it's just so much easier when the other eight are set and you know what you're kind of getting from them. It's easier to plug in a player and say, okay, go get me something. Go lock down that player, or go get me three rebounds in the next 5 minutes. But when you don't have that type of luxury at this point, just because you're scrambling, you know, again, we're talking what, five different starting lineups in six games. Dude, that's crazy. And that's not conducive to winning. But it's also like, give me another answer. Because, you know, like what you asked earlier, Kenny, the answer can't be to start Russell Westbrook against Aaron Gordon and think that you're going to get away with it. Like, because it's only a matter of time before that doesn't work at all. And you just get, you know, you have a player go for 50, which is what happened, you know, when the Golden State Warriors played against those guys.
But
they didn't have the size to match up.
Hammer, isn't it about, maybe you can't eliminate the risk, or you can't eliminate the maybe the matchup problem, but you have to minimize it somehow? Because, like, I get Doug's thought process, or at least I think I get it, starting Dylan Cardwell. Like, I feel like I understand what Doug was thinking in that. In execution, it was a disaster. It was a disaster because not a single player on the Milwaukee Bucks knew who that man was, except for the fact they knew he wasn't going to shoot. And so they were like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever you want. You're not going to do anything. And that put them at so many. So, like, there's no right answer to all of this right now as the team is currently constructed. There's no right answer. I think what Doug and his staff have to ask themselves every night is, how can we minimize the impact of this mismatch we're absolutely going to have the first, you know, 5 minutes of the game or whatever it is?
Yeah, I totally agree. But I also, I would point to this sort of like hidden thing that happened the other night against Milwaukee. I don't think that they went away from Russ as a starter just because Giannis was there. You know, that played a factor in it, right? But for me, the biggest issue that I think they realize is that if you don't have Malik Monk coming off the bench and giving you that pop, and you don't have another player who can do something like that outside of Russell Westbrook, let's buy the first 3 or 4 minutes with this player. So I'm not going out there with my best five players when I only realistically have six tonight. You know, like we keep talking about how they only have seven players, right? But when Malik isn't there, you've got six. And if you're going to go out there and throw your best punch on the opening tip, and it includes Russell Westbrook in the starting lineup, and you don't have another pitch to throw after that, then the game is over. When you go down 15-2, the game is over. So unless those starting five can figure out how to erase a deficit, they can't. You're not going to do anything different. So by bringing Russell Westbrook in off the bench, even if it's 3 or 4 minutes in, it gives you that spark, that something different, that different pitch that looks and feels different to your team. And that's how they got back in the game. It was a big push. Now, did Cardwell earn the minutes? No. But let's be honest here. The Bucks weren't going to defend Isaac Jones. They weren't going to defend Dario Saric. They weren't going to defend Drew Eubanks. That's not a coaching issue. That's a roster issue. And that, you know, so I get what you're saying, but at the same time, like coaches will tell you, you never want to start your five best guys. And if you do, it's because you got nothing else. Like, look at what the Knicks are doing right now. Like, Josh Hart should be in starting lineup, but he's not. And he's coming off the bench and he's still giving you those 10, 12 rebounds per game, but he's also giving you bench scoring. And that's why Mitchell Robinson is starting. So they have something different coming off the bench. So it's not just the same exact thing that Thibodeau threw out there, which was Miles McBride and whatever else. Now you've got Jordan Clarkson, you've got McBride, and you've got Hart coming in and giving you three that can really make a difference off the bench. And then your starting lineup, it starts with Mitchell Robinson, but he might play 12 minutes tonight. He might play 10. And if he's really good, he might play 24 if we need him as a defensive stopper. But it's just a matter of like trying to figure out combinations of players. And I don't envy him because, you know, like what Doug has like to work with isn't great. I mean, there's a reason why Dario Saric played 14 games or 16 games last season as a healthy scratch for most of the season with this Denver Nuggets team. And it's because he didn't show that he was an NBA player still. And so it's tough, but you know, that's again, Drew Eubanks bounces around from one team to the next. You know, there are players that stick places for a good reason And then there are other guys who are just fighting to stay in the league. And the Kings have a lot of those guys at this point.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
And nothing's really going to change in the next week or two. So they're going to have to figure out a way to work through that. And once again, that's something that Doug is tasked with. And I think one of the bigger bright spots about this roster and what they've been able to do is they feel like they're together. They feel like it. Could be wrong. You never really know what's going on, but it feels like they're together. They're locked in. They all are still locked in on winning, trying to win and doing what they can for that. And I think that's something that appeals to Scott Perry and Doug Christie, that they got a bunch of guys that are out there still fighting for each other, still fighting to win. They're going to have stinkers every now and then, like they had against Chicago, where they just look anemic on the defensive end in that second half. But for the most part this year, they've been out there competing every night, and that's a good start. I think that's a good start for what Christie and Scott Perry is trying to build.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, look, I think everybody, like, you should have had an eyes wide open view coming into this season. Like, especially when Keegan got hurt, I think that injury changes everything. And like, this team just, like, if you think of what he'll look like on this team, it should really give you some hope for what's going on, especially how close they're keeping it in games. If you don't have a primary defensive player that can slow down somebody, then like, it's just tough. That's why things like the Austin Reeves situation happen. Like, if you had Keegan Murray, you would have shifted Keegan Murray onto him, and maybe he doesn't go for 50, maybe he goes for 38, and the game is totally different, but you don't have him, and you don't have anyone like him, and you don't have somebody else that can, you know, even fake like they look like him on the court at all.
What do you... Two things there. One, it feels like Keegan Murray's been injured for 6 months.
It does.
It feels like he is just like that. It feels like that break or whatever it was happened in the offseason. The other thing is, you talked about how competitive this team has been, Hammer, and the outlook on the Kings has always been a glass half full, glass half empty type thing. What do you make of the fact that all six games, for the most part, have been pretty competitive games that they fought in, games that you could make an argument they've had a chance to win?
Yeah, I mean, it shows you that the talent level is there. You know, it's not the problem. Talent isn't the problem. Fit is a problem. And they're trying to work through how to fit together. And there's not going to be a perfect solution to that because they don't naturally fit together. But, you know, if you get a group of players together, and even if they don't fit well and you give them enough time, they can at least, you know, start to elevate and start playing better. And I think that's what we're starting to see. The team's just, they're figuring out where, you know, or maybe more specifically, Russell Westbrook and Dennis Schroeder are figuring out how to get DeMar DeRozan to a spot, how to feed him an entry pass at that spot, and then how to get the hell out of the way. Because, I mean, the first two games of the season, you see Dennis Schroeder just kind of standing there, and DeMar DeRozan looking at him like, hey, bro, you need to go to the other side of the court and leave me alone over here so I can ISO properly against this dude. And there's just not that recognition because they haven't played together. Now we're starting to see, okay, a little bit of flow, a little bit better, you know, sort of ball movement, player movement. And, you know, eventually you're hoping that, you know, again, when Keegan gets back, you'll start seeing back cuts. You'll start seeing a little bit better spacing on the floor. If you can get Neek Clifford out there and you can get Neek starting to hit some threes, again, all of a sudden you might see a little bit better spacing there if teams feel like they've got to defend him. But it's just going to take time. And I know people don't want to hear that. And the problem is the Kings schedule says you don't have time to say it's going to take time. You don't. The schedule is here and it's a brutal one. And you're going to take a bunch of lumps here early in the season while you're trying to learn and grow as a team. And it, every team in the league has to go through it, but not every team in the league has a schedule that has like the world champs and the second best team in the Western Conference three times each in the first, you know, 14 games. It's not typical that we see something like this where a team just gets buried by the schedule itself and the quality of teams they're playing against in that schedule.
Yeah, we got one tonight against Denver.
Russ back in Denver.
Yeah, man. They better give him a little standing ovation. A little standing. I don't know if he needs a video. I don't know if he needs a video, but a little standing ovation.
Retire his number.
Well, okay. All right.
Put four in the Raptors. Put four up there in the Raptors. Come on.
I asked Damian this question earlier. I asked you, Ham, say the Kings win tonight. Do your antennas perk up a little bit about what's going on here with the Kings, or is it just another win if they can get the win tonight in Denver?
No, it would show me that, you know, this team has some cojones, you know? Like, this is a tough schedule. Look at the four games on this road trip. I mean, OKC and then Chicago. Somehow Chicago's really good, and no one knew that was going to be the case. But also, Chicago's on the second night of a back-to-back. So you got to travel from OKC to Chicago. And, you know, midway through the season, a back-to-back is what it is. But in the first week of the season, I think that was their fifth game in like eight nights. You know, and you're still trying to gel, and you're still missing players and all this stuff. Like, if you somehow come back 2-2 on this road trip, like, bravo. It would make me feel a whole lot different about the first couple of games of the season where, you know, you didn't come through against the Suns. You let Austin Reeves, you know, completely blow you out of the water with the Lakers. You know, it would at least make me feel like there is some positive momentum going one way. But, you know, we'll see. I don't expect them to win just because this is the Nuggets. It's a tough matchup. It's a specifically, like, against this Kings roster, it's a really, really tough matchup. You know, just because of the two centers, like, what are the Kings going to do off the bench when it's Jonas Valanciunas boxing the entire Kings roster out? And the answer is nothing. They're going to lose the rebound battle tonight by a ton, most likely. Unless, again, Russell Westbrook decides to go full Russ and dominate in his return to Denver.
Triple-double, baby. Triple-double, James. James, admit here in the final moments of this show on Monday, November 3rd, you're starting to come around on old Zach LaVine. Oh, man.
I was messing with you. I was doing a freeze. Zach LaVine, like, just a beautiful offensive basketball player. But there's always, I hate doing this. There's always a but.
Doesn't happen.
And he had 31. He had 31 points in like the mid third quarter, and he finished with 31. And you're like, man, like, where did you go? Like, there's just
no one
too
said
many
he was
times.
Clutch.
Yeah, he is.
No one said
he is
De'Aaron Fox in the fourth quarter.
I'll say this again. He reminds me so much of Rudy Gay. Like, watching Rudy Gay play on a nightly basis was a treat. Like, when Rudy Gay would go to the basket and do his George Gervin finger roll, it was just like, oh my gosh, why don't you do this all the time? And that's, there are moments where Zach, you're like, you know, dude, 31 points is great. But a lot of players in the league who had 31 points in the mid third would have gone for 50. And it just feels like he just lets off the gas a little bit, or he disappears. He becomes like a wallflower for a little bit. And I don't know if it's that he feels like he's taking too many shots and he doesn't want to be that guy, or if it's teams take him out. But whatever it is, to me, he's got to fix that, because I would like to see him have one of these monster games. And I mean, but what is he, five games out of the six where he scored 30 or more? He's been absolutely spectacular.
The thing with Zach, though, like, when you mention stuff like that, is like, yeah, if he did that, he'd be a top 10 player in the game. He's not that. He's top 25, 30 player in the game. But there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong. And I don't think anybody that defends Zach LaVine says he is a top 10 player in the league. We just don't think he's number 80 like people have him before. Mm-hmm. Like that's that's ridiculous. And you know, well, you know, affecting winning and all this other stuff. Nah, man, this dude is nice. He can hoop. He is like really, really good. And would you want him to close out a game and be Mr. Fourth Quarter? Sure, but he's not. And I don't want to say that's okay, but you got somebody else to do that. You got DeMar DeRozan or you got Schroeder or Ruskin. Like, you got other people to fill that role if he's not hitting shots in the clutch in the fourth quarter. He was in some clutch shots in the fourth against the Lakers. It just didn't result in a win.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, look, for everything that he's done so far, I don't think, like, if there's a list of things that are wrong with the Kings, Zach LaVine disappearing for 8 minute sections of the game is really low on that list. It is. But, you know, I still, like, you can want more from a player. And, you know, I think that he, again, is just he's so smooth. When he decides to go to the basket and either dunk on somebody or that little up and under that he does, that is so gorgeous. You know, just everything that he does on the court, you're just, except for play defense, you're like, you're in awe of what he's doing. And that's cool. It's, you know, it's something I've said, like, people don't understand what it was like to cover DeMarcus Cousins for 82 games a year. It was beautiful. Like, that dude did things on the court that no one in the game has ever done. And the same thing with Rudy Gay. Like, there are things that he could do on a court that, like, at his time in the league, maybe four other guys could do in the league. And he just didn't do it enough. He always left you wanting more. But yeah, I definitely appreciate. I thought you were going to ask me about Russ, just so you know. That's what I thought you were going to do. You've changed your mind on Russ. Russ has been fun.
Think you like Russell Westbrook. Like, you knew from jump what he brings. Like, there's going to be more good moments, more bad moments. Like, that's Russ. That's fine.
Yeah, my question was always going to be at what expense? Who loses? And, you know, it's worked out a little bit that it's Keon.
We all win.
We all win.
Everybody wins.
Hopefully the Sacramento Kings win.
We're going to be talking tomorrow if that happens.
Yeah, we sure would. For those that can watch Monday Night Football, enjoy it.
Good, because you can listen to it on ESPN 1320.
You heard the man. We'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m. on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos Kings like the bean!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.